Support for this podcast of The Exchange is brought to you by the Dagoba Group, a global diversity and inclusion consulting practice with specialties in unconscious bias, leadership dynamics, and client engagement. Authors of the book, The Inclusion Dividend. More at thedagobagroup.com.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Opportunity. And from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community. With convenient locations throughout northern New England, world-class providers are closer than you think. Visit DartmouthHitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Accustomed to hearing about the gender gap in pay and in politics, but a recent study from the Pew Research Center says there's a gender gap in religion as well. Scholars have observed this for years, that more women are involved in religious activities than men, from attending worship to daily prayer. And Pew finds that this is true in almost every country in the world and in almost every religion you can think of. But while these numbers are well established, what researchers don't really know is why. They have their theories, however, which always raise lots of debate about biology, nature versus nurture, and women's economic status in society. Today in The Exchange, the faith-based gender gap. We'll look at why women are more religious than men and what steps some religious institutions are taking to bring more men into the fold. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have three guests for the hour. Joining us from Hanover, Randall Balmer, professor of American Religious History at Dartmouth College. His latest book is Redeemer, The Life of Jimmy Carter. And Randall Balmer, welcome back to The Exchange. Good to have you.
Thank you, Laura. Good to be here.
Also joining us from Dartmouth, Zahra Ayoubi. She's an assistant professor of religion at Dartmouth. She specializes in gender in Islam. Zahra is also editor-in-chief of Aziza Magazine. That's a quarterly American Muslims intellectual lifestyle publication. And Zahra, good to have you too. Thank you for your time.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Also with us from UNH, Michelle Dillon, professor of sociology there. She's written extensively about religion. And Michelle, welcome back to you too. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Laura. I'm happy to be here.
Well, and all of you, we're going to start with Carol Murphy. She's a senior writer and editor at Pew Research Center. She was a contributor to the report I mentioned on gender differences in religious commitment. And Carol, thank you for taking time out. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me, Laura.
So how big is the gap, Carol? How much more religious are American women than men?
Well, really, it depends on the measure or the indicator of religious commitment that you're looking at. And in our study, we examined four. And women were more religious than men on all four. The first one is affiliation, that is, do you identify with a religious group? The second one is prayer. And here is the biggest gender gap. Women are more likely than men to say they pray daily by 17 percentage points.
Wow.
The two other indicators are, do you attend services, religious services weekly? And more women than men attend by 8 percentage points. And then the final indicator of religious commitment we looked at was, do you say that religion is important, somewhat important, or not important in your life? And women, by 13 percentage points, are more likely to say that religion is important in their lives than men are.
So no matter how you slice it, Carol, American women feel more drawn to religion than men do.
That's exactly what the evidence shows in our study.
How much was this gender gap, Carol, reflected across religions in the U.S.? You know, we're Christian women especially more religious than men? Were, you know, Jewish women especially more religious than Jewish men?
I think the biggest gender gap is among Christians. Across the board, Christian women are more religious than Christian men, we found. And the most interesting, one of the most interesting aspects of our study, and this is true both in the United States and in other parts of the world, is that Muslim women and Muslim men, for the most part, have similar levels of religious commitment. In other words, the gender gap is very small or non-existent. However, in one indicator of religious commitment, which is attendance at worship services, there Muslim men are more religious than Muslim women.
And we'll definitely, go ahead.
Yeah, that's true, both in the United States and elsewhere.
Well, we'll definitely pick up on that later with Zahra Ayoubi. But so among Christians in the United States, Carol, the gender gap is the biggest.
I would say yes, it is probably the most consistent. In other words, if you look at all the indicators we examined, Christian women consistently come out more religious than Christian men.
You know, what's interesting to me from this study, Carol, is that our gender gap, our faith-based gender gap, if we could call it that, was among the biggest in the world. Tell us a little bit more about that, Carol. How did American women and men compare to American women and men in other countries that Pew studied?
Yeah, this is one of the surprising findings for us also. We compared the religiosity of men and women in the United States with the religiosity of men and women in five other economically advanced countries. And we found that not only were American men and women more religious than men and women in these other countries, but the gender gap, in other words, the difference in religious commitment between men and women in America, was the widest of all the gender gaps. Now, you probably want to know, well, why is this so? We would like to know, too. I mean, we examined many theories in one chapter in our report has an academic review of the academic literature on why women are more religious than men. But we don't come to any conclusion. But we set out these the main theories, and they fall into two different categories. Is it nature? In other words, something universal in women because of their makeup or their genes? Or is it nurture? In other words, is it due to social conditions, economic conditions, and the way the genders are reared?
So in terms of Pew and this study, you looked at the numbers, you put them out there, you talk about the theories as to why, but you guys don't, you know, jump into what you think might be behind this gender gap.
That's really beyond our mandate. We had all this wonderful data in our systems because of all the surveys we've done globally and in the United States. So we just decided to pull out all the data on religion that we had and to compare the differences between men and women.
Is there anything else, Carol, that you think people should know about this study? It's very broad in scope and there's a lot in it.
There is, and I think that there's a lot, still a lot to be studied. We were able to look at data in 84 countries, and many of those countries had non-Christian majorities, which is another feature of our study, because many past studies only looked at predominantly Christian countries. So I think there's a lot more to be looked at because in the other countries that we did not have data in, and also in exploring for the academic community to explore why is it there's this difference between men and women when it comes to religion.
All right. And we'll talk about that with our scholars this hour. Carol Murphy, thank you for kicking it off with us. We appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure, Laura. Thank you.
Carol Murphy, she's a senior writer and editor at Pew Research Center and a contributor to the report that we're looking at this hour on the gender gap in terms of religious practices. You can join us, too, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, if you are involved in a house of worship. What do you notice at your house of worship? If you have thoughts about why this gender gap may be so wide, especially in this country, we'd love to hear from you. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Join us as we look at this question of why American women are much more religious than men. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Zahra Ayoubi, Randall Balmer, Michelle Dillon, let's jump into this. And to you first, I think, Michelle, what do you make of this research showing wide gaps in religious participation between American men and women?
Well, Laura, it's always very interesting to see such a wide breadth of data, and it always raises all kinds of intriguing questions. But I would think, you know, the main point here of a gender gap in religion, I would argue, in looking at the data that they have from Pew and other studies, is to really look at the social context, the historical context, and indeed the more local context in which religion matters. And so I think when you start unwrapping those sorts of questions, you see that there's lots of good social reasons why women might be more involved in religion than men.
Social reasons. So give us a little bit more there, Michelle, such as?
Well, first of all, of course, the context. I mean, obviously, religion in America is a very different phenomenon than it is even in other Western economically developed countries, as Pew notes. And even just making these comparisons between the U.S. and Western Europe is, you know, it's a very challenging task because there's such different contexts, even though they share so many, you know, general sort of macro level variables in terms of economic and women's status. But religion in the U.S. has always been much more a part of the everyday fabric of social life. And within that, it was seen, going back at least to the late 19th century, as being women's work, that women sending kids to Sunday school or to some kind of exposure to religious services was a strong cultural strand, thinking that this was good for children and kind of exposed them to some kind of moral socialization. And, of course, just like so many other things that women have taken responsibility for in the home, religious socialization was seen as women's domain, mother's domain. And so I think that's a large part of what we see here, is that historically and over time, culturally, women have taken more responsibility for it. It's an expectation that they should be more involved. And then I think once they start getting involved with their children and church, then, of course, they form social relationships through church. They can enjoy the ritual and liturgical aspects of church and therefore find personal meaning there. So I think it's really the social context of the involvement which is key to understanding the gender difference.
Wow. And Randall Balmer, how about you? What do you make of this research, first of all?
Well, first of all, I think we need to congratulate Pew on yet another really wonderful study, because they've really been very thorough in the last few years in trying to chart religious attitudes and behaviors. What strikes me is that this is a confirmation of a trend that's been present in American society since the late 17th century. That is to say that Puritans believed that men were responsible for the religious welfare of the home and for the spiritual nurture of the children. That begins to change with the rise of the business class, particularly in Boston in the late part of the 17th century, but especially in the 19th century. As men go off to work in the factories, for example, they're no longer in the homes, no longer involved in subsistence farming and other similar activities. Women become responsible for the spiritual welfare of the household. This is what happens. What happens at this time is that the whole notion of virtue, which in the revolutionary period meant civic republicanism, that is being a good patriot, by 1840 or so, virtue becomes synonymous with femininity. And women are flooding into the churches, finding there a great deal of release for their, first of all, for their discretionary time that was available to them, but also for an expression for their spirituality in the 19th century. So you have the whole cult of domesticity and the cult of true womanhood in the 19th century, which is really a precursor of what we see today.
So once people are no longer operating each family as sort of an independent economic entity, you know, subsistence farming, artisan work or whatever, Randall, once men sort of quote unquote go off to work and women are left by the hearth, if I could put it that way, this becomes their domain.
It does. The one way to look at that is to look at a Victorian household or a Victorian house. Obviously, we're talking now about white middle class, mostly Northeast, but nevertheless, the stereotype, I think, is instructive. You have women who are in charge of the entire domestic sphere, and they organize the entire household according to their values and particularly according to religious values. So, for example, the parlor organ really represents almost an altar there in the living room or the parlor of the home. And it's the woman, it's the wife, the mother who sits at the organ and plays hymns for the family. She is responsible now for the spiritual well-being of her household, whereas in the 17th century, at least ostensibly, it was the man who was responsible for the religious well-being of the household.
Zahra Ayyubi, I'd love to hear from you too on this. Just very broadly first, please, what do you make of this wide gap that Pew finds?
Sure. So I agree with my colleagues in large part in terms of the responsibilities placed upon women during the economic shifts in the household, as well as the kinds of cultural empowerment that women received in participation, in religious participation. I would also add the dimension of immigration in terms of impact on women's participation. Because immigration from the beginning, regardless of what religious tradition people belong to, created this barrier to participating in a broader, or immigrants, in fact, participated in a broader American religious framework by inculcating religious ideas to their children, and particularly that responsibility fell upon women's shoulders to reproduce the religion of the old country, to reproduce and sustain the religious culture of the greater extended family that may have been left behind or is now in the United States, and to sort of create sort of pockets of communities that were family based through this familial responsibility. And and the story of immigration really from the beginning is very closely tied in with that preservation of culture, which fell upon women's shoulders.
That's interesting. So, Zahra, beyond that sort of traditional Victorian image that Randall Balmer painted, immigrant families, too, the woman was sort of the one who kept the family together in this new and strange place, and religion was a big part of that.
Absolutely. And I mean, as much as women may have preserved the, you know, the whatever cuisine of their national origin, certainly religious tradition is not divorced from the various cultural reproductions that took place in the United States. And we're not just talking about more recent immigrants, which come to mind, of course, but sort of the history of immigration within the United States that brought in and flourished more religions in the U.S. Is part of that history.
Well, and by the way, we asked Carol Murphy how Pew measured religiosity, and she gave us four measures: what people say about their affiliation, how important it is to them, whether they pray daily, whether they attend services on a regular basis. I want to ask all of you, but you first, Zahra, how should we measure religiosity?
Yeah, so the study, it seems to me, measured, well, the four things that it measures, right, affiliation, prayer, public religious attendance or attendance in services, and how important religion is to people, those measures really to me seem to come down to prayer, public, private, right? So those are the major sorts of things that that we're measuring in terms of who is more religious. And daily prayer may not be the best indicator, or even attendance at services may not be the best indicator of measuring religious commitment, particularly with respect to women, Muslim men and Muslim women. I would say if the survey shows that Muslim men and Muslim women are much closer in prayer and in holding religion important, then it really can't be that men are more committed than women. So we have to look at the historical and cultural factors in order to understand the gendered nature of religiosity. So, for instance, the various within Islam, the notion of ibadat, which is worship, is really, really wide. It's not just the actual ritual prayer that one engages in, but worship can include community service activities, can include raising your children, can include smiling to a neighbor, certainly remembrance of God, giving charity. Those kinds of things are all considered forms of worship.
So it's a lot more than just showing up on on Sunday, so to speak.
Absolutely.
Sahara.
Showing up on Sunday, Saturday, Friday, or whatever day of the week. Absolutely.
Right.
So that's certainly a part, must be part of the measure of religiosity. Multiple things.
We will talk more in just a moment. A lot more to dig into on this topic. And you can give us a call, too. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Why do you think American women are so much more religious than men? 1-800-892-6477. More in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a new study on the faith-based gender gap and how American women are far more likely to be religious than men. Give us your thoughts on this topic. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. Why do you think this faith-based gender gap exists among American men and women? What do you see in your own religious practices, if you have one? 1-800-892-6477, again, is the number. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And Michelle Dillon, same question that I asked Zahara before the break. How should we measure religiosity? This is not to pick on Pew. They had to pick
right.
some measurements, but still, are there other ways to look at it?
Yes, well, of course, as you know, these are very much the standardized measures that have been used in lots of, you know, social surveys of religion, you know, for several generations now. But they're complicated in a sense, because even just the language of affiliation itself has changed so much over the last 30 years. What Pew itself has been in the forefront of documenting. You know, what does it mean to self-identify with a particular religious tradition or a particular religious denomination? There's a lot of noise around that. Many people identify with a religion, but it doesn't really mean too much in terms of their everyday practice or their everyday, you know, beliefs. Similarly, of course, there's been a huge transformation in terms of non-church or non-traditional based religiosity. Again, just focusing on the American context for a moment, the whole rise of spiritual seeking and all the complications around that. You know, what do people understand by awe? Where do they feel the presence of some higher power, some universal spirit? Do you need to go to a place of worship to experience that? Can you experience it hiking in the mountains or at a beautiful, in front of a beautiful piece of art? So, you know, there's a lot going on in terms of Americans' spirituality, which is very difficult to capture in these very traditional measures that we have used for many, you know, decades.
Well, and I want to pick up on something that Kara Murphy told us again, and Randall, to you first. She said the gap is especially big among Christians in this country. Why do you think that's the case, Randall?
Well, I'm not sure that I can have a clear answer to that question, other than, again, to emphasize that this has been the case for a very long time. And I think it has to do more with social context than religious particularity. That is to say that I think it has more to do with the onset of the Industrial Revolution, for example, where men are heading off from the home and socializing more in the workplace, hitting the tavern on the way back from work and so forth, and coming to see themselves and to be seen as more secular. So I'm not sure it has anything to do particularly with Christianity so much as it does the social context.
What about the nature versus nurture that some researchers, I know this is touchy, Randall, but some researchers have said maybe women are just biologically more open to spirituality. Again, this is tricky ground, but go ahead, Randall.
It is. Probably there's something to that, women being more intuitive in some way, I suppose. But I think education plays into it as well. The educational system in this nation for a long time has been guided by the canons of enlightenment and rationalism. So it tends to be the case, although not necessarily, and I would put myself as an exception to this pattern. It tends to be the case that the more educated someone is, the less religious he or she might be. And for a long time in American history, women have been less formally educated than men, and so that may be part of the explanation as well.
Well, and all of you at the beginning of the show talked about the history and all agreed that no matter what the type of family, 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 300 years ago, the woman's place was more the head of the family and the children and so forth. But here we are, Michelle Dillon. It's 2015. Women are, you know, running for president, holding governor's offices here in New Hampshire. You know, women are working and running companies and so forth. So this gap still persists. So I just wonder what you think about the extension of this history that all of you agreed with to our times today.
Well, you know, gender expectations don't change overnight. So even though women are much more likely now to participate in the labor force, we also know from lots of research that they're also more likely to continue to do the housework at home and do all that running around with childcare, you know, so that it doesn't just suddenly change overnight because women are in the workforce. So therefore, they're, you know, not doing all these other tasks that they have historically been burdened with. You know, women are involved in religion, that's true, but we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that men too, many men are religious. Yes, there's a gender gap, and so that's important that we're talking about that. But there's not just a gender gap in religion, there's also a generational gap, very much so. And in fact, when you talk about the divisions within Christianity, the gender gap among Catholics has actually disappeared in the last 20 years or so. And among the younger generation of self-identified Catholics, for example, white women, young white millennial women, are the least religious compared to either Hispanic women or to white men, for example, of the same age group. So we certainly see some transformation happening in terms of young Catholic women and their attachment to church, the relevance and the personal importance of Catholicism and of religion in general in their lives. So there's certainly some transitioning going on.
We should definitely talk about that. So
Zahra,
hang on, Michelle.
Yeah,
Zahra, yeah, real interesting. I just want to ask Michelle one more quick follow-up because it's real interesting what you said, that the gender gap has disappeared among Catholics now. But it sounds like from what you're saying, Michelle, that doesn't mean that more men are flocking to Catholicism. It means that young women are turning away from Catholicism.
Well,
is that right?
There are two things. One is that among women, you know, for several decades, women were more involved in Catholicism and identified with it and took it more seriously in all kinds of levels. So women across all age groups have withdrawn somewhat from Catholicism and from involvement in the church. So these old, women in their 40s and their 50s, as well as older women. So they themselves, so that therefore the what used to be a gap between men and women of that generation, of those generations, has now basically evened out because of those women pulling back. So it's not that men, as you say, have become more religious. But then if you just focus on the millennial generation, you see a very clear divide between young women and young men, where women are the least involved. So, but it's also important to recognize that the older women, too, are less involved than they historically used to be.
In the Catholic Church.
In the Catholic Church.
Go ahead, Zahra. I'd love to hear from you on this, too. The idea that here we are, we've talked about all this history, but here we are, it's 2015.
Yeah, I just wanted to pick up on the point that despite women being part of the workplace and running for president and all those very interesting and wonderful sort of developments, women do continue to be responsible for the home and reproducing the domestic labor it requires to maintain the home. And that is a very private thing because it's literally about the home and the private sphere. And oftentimes religion is lumped into that category. Religion itself tends to be a very private thing, spirituality, prayer, self-reflection, these kinds of things that the study is measuring as part of religiosity, those are oftentimes very private except for the public religious services, right? And those things are oftentimes managed and reproduced in the home. So one may pray as if one's mother does. One may the social programming of the home, the calendar of the household may revolve around those religious holidays. And so the private sphere and the religious sphere are very much interrelated. And if women are in charge of that private sphere, then they will also be then in charge of that religious sphere as well.
Zahra, I wanted to ask you the same question I asked Randall. And again, tricky ground, but we've talked a lot about, the history, the traditional role, the economic status and society of women. What about the nature versus nurture argument? Have you read, thought about the idea that women might be biologically more open to a spiritual practice? This is, again, one of the theories that's out there.
Sure. I think it comes back to the debate over sort of whether there is a such thing as an essential woman and whether that is natural and inherent within women? And, you know, is it a factor of having 2X chromosomes that suddenly there's all sorts of things you are interested in over others? And I agree, it is a tricky ground, and I don't think that scholars have come to and scientists have come to any kind of resolution on this. But certainly, scholars of gender and women's and gender studies and sexuality studies tend to look at this debate through the notion of whether there is an essential woman, right? Whether there is something inherently essential about women's experiences. And while there are many things in common between women, certainly there isn't an essential woman, and that there are so many cultural and what you would call term nurture factors, right, that go into creating women's experiences, that there just wouldn't be necessarily a few pinpoint factors that create that make women more religious per se. But certainly there are commonalities in women's experiences in terms of that nurture that that probably push women to be religious greater than men. So not necessarily biological. I wouldn't be able to comment on the biological substrates of religion.
Well, you're an assistant professor of religion at Dartmouth, not a biologist or anyone in that field. But it does sound like, Michelle Dillon, that a lot of scholars don't want to touch this idea.
Well, I think there's many reasons that we won't necessarily get into this morning for why that is. But, you know, of course, evolutionary perspectives, and increasingly we're getting more and more sophisticated in understanding genetics and their impact on all kinds of things. But, you know, in the meantime, I think we have to look at most of these things that we would study in the social sciences and history, and I include religion in that, in terms of the social and historical context. You know, so then we start having to interrogate if we're going to argue for a genetic disposition. So is it all of these historically immigrants who have come to the U.S. that have brought a very special gene that has made America more religious than England, for example, or whatever other society we want to look at? So it raises all kinds of questions that are interesting and intriguing for late night philosophical discussion perhaps and among biologists. But in the meantime, I prefer to focus on the social character and context of what it means to be religious in America today. So even if one were to concede, which I'm not necessarily conceding, that women are more intuitive and more nurturing by definition, by nature, really, they don't necessarily you're not born thinking, oh, I must go to church, I must feel the spiritual awe. You live in a social context which imposes certain role expectations. And of course, as we've discussed, those expectations can change over time. And so you get on with it. You do certain things. So it doesn't necessarily mean that women, for example, are suddenly now suited to run for president, but yet we have a woman running, right? There are certain factors that have perhaps impeded that happening, you know, in prior elections. So it's the same with religion. I think we have to recognize that it's a social phenomenon. And this is not to say that religion doesn't have great importance for people. Of course it does, because that's what social life is about. But they're more likely to be involved in religion because of the social context in which religion is lived out, I would say.
Again, our number is 1-800-892-6477. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the faith-based gender gap. And we'd love your thoughts on this, what you've observed in your own life, and why you think American women are much more religious than men. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. 1-800-892-6477. So, Randall Balmer, given this gender gap, and all of you have said that it has existed for a long time, how have you seen, Randall, religious organizations responding? Are they trying to appeal to more male audiences, or have they just given up and said, okay, we're going to focus on where the numbers are?
No. Throughout American history, particularly in Christianity, which is, I guess, primarily what we're talking about today, throughout American history, there have been various overtures and even campaigns and programs trying to lure men back into the churches. And it primarily takes the form of something that we call muscular Christianity, the notion of Christianity being associated with and twinned with athletics of some sort, or some sort of muscularity. So in the 19th century, for example, organizations like the YMCA would be an example of muscular Christianity, and also the Salvation Army, because militarism becomes part of that as well. The idea that you're drawing on New Testament metaphors that St. Paul uses, talking about running the race and putting on the full armor of God and that sort of thing. And various people have tried to become programmatic with this and tried to lure men back into the churches. In the early part of the 1910s, 1911, 1912, there was a movement called the Men and Religion Forward Movement that put display ads in sports sections of newspapers, for example.
Really?
Had
wow.
Big rallies in at Carnegie Hall and that sort of thing, trying to lure men to the churches. Probably the best recent example of that would be from the 1990s, and I'm sure many of you remember this, many people listening would remember this, something called Promise Keepers that was begun by the football coach at the time at the University of Colorado in University of Colorado, out in Colorado, obviously. And the idea was to fill athletic stadiums with men who would dedicate their lives to being better husbands and fathers and church members, but also better Christians, better believers. So muscular Christianity has been one of the primary appeals. I think more recently you see it in evangelicalism, the kinds of services or kind of approaches that a lot of these churches use. Some of them, for example, would have big game hunting banquets and that sort of thing to try to appeal to hunters and that sort of thing. So there have been various attempts to try to redress the gender imbalance in American Christianity, but none has been successful. At
least, so that's interesting. So this Men and Religion Forward, you know, a big effort more than 100 years ago, Randall, did it work?
For a time, it did. What happened is that, the war broke out and everything kind of gets suspended during conflicts like that. But it was at least modestly successful, trying to lure men back to the churches. But the point was to – and there were books, for example, that portrayed Jesus as an astute businessman, again, trying to appeal to men to get them back into the faith.
Wow, real interesting. What do you think, Zahara? Do you see religious institutions, whether they be, you know, Jewish temples or Muslim mosques or Christian churches, do you see them trying to reach out to men?
Certainly. I mean, I can speak most directly on the Muslim community, and I would say that correction to appeal to men is not quite happening because they're now just realizing that women are, in fact, either equally or more religious as men, and there is a correction going on in that regard. Currently, there's a movement going on. Thousands upon thousands of American Muslim women are certainly tired of not being able to participate in the mosque in the way that they want to be, because historically mosques have been architecturally as well as culturally, sort of on a global scale, but and historically, but also within the United States, have been constructed for men occupying the greater space of the mosque and women occupying much smaller spaces in the mosque. And now people are realizing that the Muslim institutions are realizing that that's no longer tenable, since Muslim women are at least half of the participants, if not more, and want the active say. They want greater space, equal space. They would like a greater say on mosque boards and community organizations and so on and so forth, so much so that now there are women who are creating third spaces as well as women's only religious spaces. The Women's Mosque of America is a great example. It's a new mosque just for women out in California, and that sort of has had spinoffs on a global scale. But definitely that correction of gendered space within religious institutions is happening, and perhaps there might be a correction backwards some years down the line in terms of the Muslim community.
And we will pick up in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a recent Pew study on gender and religion finds a significant faith-based gender gap in this country, that American women much more strongly identify with organized religion than men. We're looking closer at that, what might be behind it. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also find us on Facebook or Twitter. 1-800-892-6477 is the number. And before we go to our listeners, Michelle, I did want to ask you also what we were talking about with Randall Balmer and Zahara Ayoubi, the idea that some institutions are trying to recognize this gap and reach out to men to get them back into the pews, so to speak. What are you seeing in terms of these efforts to attract men?
Well, just certainly in terms of the Catholic Church, certainly at the local parish level, oftentimes you'll see that they have, you know, men's spirituality groups. So that would be something that has happened maybe relatively recently in the last few years, at least, as a way of trying to get men to not just get together, but actually explore and to talk about what it means to be spiritual or religious or Catholic or whatever it is. So that's one way. But I mean, these issues of gender, of course, depending on what tradition or denomination you're looking at, just as when you're looking at Islam, similarly with Catholicism, in terms of women's sort of official status within the church, that tends to sort of detract from their everyday involvement in the pews. So, of course, issues of church leadership and ordination. And so when you start talking about gender in terms of Catholicism, it brings in a lot of other complicated questions.
Well, let's go to the phones, all of you. And Robert's calling from Westminster, Vermont. Hi, Robert. You're on the exchange. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. I'm really enjoying a show.
Good.
You've said a lot of good things to say, and I think perhaps our church in Walpole, New Hampshire, the Congregational Church, United Church of Christ, seems to be somewhat of an exception. The men are very active. We may be, I never thought about it this way, we're all together, but there may be two-thirds of the church of women and maybe one-third of men, but they're all very active, and the men put on a chicken barbecues, they help the heavy lifting, the rummage sales, their deacons, their trustees, and women are on all of these boards also. We've had study groups,
Study groups, meaning sort of
Bible
gender-based?
And reading a book and then discussing it.
Do you have men's groups and women's groups like Michelle described?
No.
Like,
there's a women's group that is very, very active, and they have wonderful programs, and they put on suppers, and the men help with cleaning up and doing things. But the women contribute a lot of money to the church. But one of the things that we find is that we lack the age group of maybe 25 to 35 or 40 because there are so many athletic programs. This makes it hard to get many students at a Sunday school because they're scheduled by their schools to have games.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that happens on Sundays that used to, Randall Balmer, not happen on Sundays at all.
Yes.
So there's a timing thing as well. The encroachment of other activities on Sunday morning, although other religions don't practice on Sunday morning, Shabbat, for example, Friday night. So let's keep that in mind. But go ahead, Randall. I'd love your thoughts on that.
No, that's a really good point. And I'll just give you a quick anecdote. A few years ago, I visited 12 churches all across the country that in 1950 had been designated by Christian Century magazine as great churches. So I visited them 40 years later to find out if they were still great. And I remember very clearly down in Apex, North Carolina, which is a rural section of the Research Triangle Park area, Research Triangle in North Carolina. And I asked one of the older women in the congregation what had changed over 40 years. And she said, 40 years ago, when the school was going to schedule an event, they called the church to make sure there was no conflict on the calendar. Today, the church calls the school to make sure there's no conflict on the calendar. And it's just an indication of the changes that go on that have taken place in American society. And in terms of athletics, yes, I hear this all the time. You know, soccer practice is Sunday morning, and that really does kind of carve out the demographic that Robert was talking about in his phone call. But the way churches tried to address that in the past about 100 years ago, the so-called institutional church movement, was to have to build basketball courts in the church facility, to have bowling alley lanes in the church facility, again, trying to use athletics to try to bring men and keep men within the churches. Church softball leagues, for example, would be another example of that sort of thing.
Well, Randall, last question for you, because I know you have to leave us a little bit early today. We talked a lot about, you know, women's status in society, their continuing place in the home, their economic status out in the rest of the world. As researchers look at this, some say that as women's economic status continues to rise, this divide in religiosity will narrow. What do you think, Randall?
It might. I'm a historian, so I tend to look at the past more than the future.
Fair enough.
I think the other thing that's worth mentioning too, Laura, in this survey, and what struck me is that it was a survey, Carol was indicated, that they looked at 84 countries or something like that. Yes, there's a gender gap almost everywhere, but what really struck me about the survey once again was how off the charts the United States is in terms of religious adherence to begin with. Yes, there's a gender gap, but compared to any place else in the world, we are off the charts. We are religious people, despite the fact that in recent years that has been ratcheted down a bit, in really quite dramatically, actually. But still, we are religious people, and this is part of who we are. It's part of our DNA.
All right. Well, Randall, I know you have to go teach a class, so we'll let you go a little bit early. Thank you for being with us.
My pleasure, as always. Thanks, Laura.
That's Randall Balmer, professor of American Religious History at Dartmouth College. Again, his latest book is Redeemer, The Life of Jimmy Carter. We'll continue with Michelle Dillon at UNH and Zahra Ayoubi at Dartmouth College. And Zahra, I think I heard you wanted to jump in there.
Yeah, I would say that I agree that we're really not sure whether the gap will persist. But I think that it certainly will in some communities narrow, depending on whether economic status has such a huge impact on religiosity. But in others, it will actually continue to grow. So, for example, in the Muslim community, greater education for women has shown actually greater religiosity. Mm-hmm. And although that might seem antithetical, oftentimes women turn to religion and turn to their Islam as a refuge from patriarchy, and as they know more about gender within the scriptural sources and things like that, they feel much more at home within their religiosity. And so we might actually be looking for a greater gap and more women, and the gap between Muslim men and Muslim women might actually grow even further than what we are seeing now from Pew. But again, I think it depends on the community, and that's where the nuance is so helpful, because in other communities, the economic status might bring secularization.
Interesting. So it cuts differently depending on the faith that you're talking about.
Right, I think so.
Okay, let's take another call, and this is Allison in Dover. Hi, Allison. Go ahead. You're in the Exchange. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. I think this is a really interesting topic. I was struck by one of the comments that one of your panel members made about the socialization of gender when it comes to religiosity, and I just wonder if the kind of the way we were socialized as children plays into, women being more vocal about their religious beliefs at home. I thought about my own family, where my mom was much more vocal about her beliefs than my dad. And my siblings and I ended up kind of leaning more towards my mom's beliefs than my dad's beliefs. And I find with my husband now, I'm a lot more vocal about my belief system than he is about his.
So women are just more comfortable talking about it, Allison? Is that what you're saying?
Well, because I think we're socialized to speak more freely about our feelings, where men are socialized to be more stoic and reserved, and less likely for them to share their feelings as freely. Not all men, but, you know.
Well, Allison, yeah, thank you for the call. And Michelle Dillon, what do you think?
Yeah, well, I think what Allison says sounds, you know, resonates with, I think, a lot of people. And that is that, you know, women, because they're more comfortable in the domain of religion, partly because of habit, right? They're in the churches more and in places of worship more. They're also more at ease talking about these issues and in general, sort of sharing a certain amount of feeling in a way that men still might see religion as being feminized, if you like, that it's really for sissies, to use that term, unfortunately, that's often used to say that church is not as masculine, going back to our early conversation, and that it really is for women. So that, in a sense, gives them more permission to discuss their feelings about it.
Well, Allison, thanks for the call. And you can join us, too, at 1-800-892-6477. Again, email is exchange@nhpr.org. The number, 1-800-892-6477. You know, Michelle, I'd love your thoughts, too, on what Zahra said in terms of as women's economic status continues to rise, as they get, you know, out in the world more and more, will this gap continue? Zahra said it depends on which faith you're talking about.
Well, it does, absolutely. And in fact, in America, education goes along with religion. So, you know, many of the highly educated in America are the ones who are in religious involvement, who are in the churches and places of worship. And, it, you know, so that's sort of this assumption that the more educated you are, the more rational you are about these things. That certainly is not sustained empirically in the American context. You know, looking to, you know, it's always hard to predict the future. But I think if you just look at current trends in the U.S. today, there's certainly a lot of transformation happening with religion, both as a private experience and also, of course, in terms of public culture and the place of religious institutions in society. This is a secular society. Religion is very important here in people's lives and in the public culture, but it has its own place. You know, so for the most people who are religious in America, being religious is a moderate thing. I know sometimes some of the political rhetoric and some of the debates over the so-called culture wars issues, we often see some of the more extreme rhetoric of religious adherence. But for the vast majority of people who are actively involved in religion, however you measure it, it's a very moderate, it's a piece of their lives. It's not the overarching piece or even one of the most important pieces. It's just part of their, you know, everyday, weekly being and their identity.
I wanted to ask both of you about religious leadership in this country and start off by sharing with you something I came across by the California-based author and journalist Rebecca Tujos-Dubrow. She says in 2008, a Brandeis professor, Sylvia Barak Fishman, co-authored a paper that found Jewish men to be less invested in their religious identity and less active in synagogue life than Jewish women. And this set off a whole discussion about, you know, whether Judaism was becoming feminized, so to speak. The author of this article, Rebecca Tujos-Dubrow, goes on to say that the numbers show, however, that men still dominate. She says about one half of Reconstructionist, two-thirds of Reform, and a much larger fraction of conservative rabbis are male. She goes on to say, though, women do seem to be significantly more involved in the laity. Let's talk about the leadership a little bit. And Michelle, to you first, some scholars have noted that it's ironic that American women are so much more faithful than men, given that most mainstream denominations in this country are still run by men, you know, yeah, from the top down. You know, how much does it matter to women who's running the show at church or temple or mosque or whatever?
Well, it matters a great deal to them. But I think there's also this splitting. On the one hand, they, let's say in the context of Catholicism, where women can't be ordained as priests and therefore can't also be bishops or cardinals or pope, for that matter, they're very, I mean, from, you know, regardless of their ideology, so to speak, whether they're liberal or moderate, many Catholic women, you know, do feel excluded, that they're excluded from this one sacrament, right? And so they have issues with church leadership, even though women have a lot of senior positions in terms of running dioceses and parishes too, for that matter, but they're actually are excluded from the sacrament of ordination. But they somehow sort of split that from their own activities in the pews, even though some will tell you when you talk to them that their sort of their activism now needs to be a little more localized. And that is, I heard people saying this, you know, why should we be Eucharistic ministers or readers or work in the choir if we can't have access to ordination. And so that can propel some to cut back and certainly to withdraw from church. So it isn't, it's more than ironic, you know, that as you say, that you have these senior positions in several religions that are populated by men. You know, the mainline Protestants are exceptions here. And yet the people in the pews are the women.
What do you think, Zahra, putting on your assistant professor of religion hat just broadly, does it, and you also do gender studies as well, how much does it matter to women that they are not as heavily represented in positions of leadership?
It matters a lot. So running the show is basically authority, and who has authority really matters, right? So it's basically who has access to God. That really matters. And you know, another great irony, of course, is that even if the male leadership or the male religious establishment might hold gender biased views or patriarchal views, or even if they may have just, you know, slight preference for male dominance within the religious sphere. The great irony, another great irony, of course, is that with women being more and more active and or perhaps faithful or committed to religious institutions or religion itself, that inculcates and creates leadership prospects in women. So the fact that they are the ones who are attending, or the fact that they may are the ones who are responsible for reproducing the religious culture at home, that actually creates the desire for leadership in women, and that certainly is something that, you know, we see across multiple different religious communities. And the other thing, of course, is that with religion being with religious authority being then democratized in that way, that also creates room for reinterpretation of religious ideas themselves. So women see and read more gender egalitarian than men do, and so that changes the very nature of how people might then understand how gender works in the future.
Wow. Okay. Well, we have to wrap it up there. Zahra, thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Zahra Ayoubi, Assistant Professor of Religion at Dartmouth College, specializing in gender and Islam, editor-in-chief of Aziza Magazine. Michelle Dillon, always good to have you too. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Laura. You're welcome.
Michelle Dillon, Professor of Sociology at UNH. This is The Exchange on NHPR.